You're listening to Data Center Therapy. Please take a number, and an engineer will be right with you. Hey, everybody. Good afternoon, and welcome back to another episode of Data Center Therapy. Once again, my name is Matt Yeti. I am here with Chris Crow. Chris, how are you this afternoon?
Oh, doing quite well, Matt. Thank you.
Seems like we've got a little microphone upgrade there on that side.
Yep. It turns out dynamic vocal mics are probably not the way to go for podcast recording, but
Funny. I would have never known. I would have been like, is that a nice quality mic? Yeah, that should work just fine. But, you learn something new every day in this industry.
Yep. Yeah. Going from a dynamic mic to a condenser mic has made a world of difference. Although provided there's no loud cars or anything that goes by, this will certainly be an improvement.
I would say we're definitely consulting engineers and not audio engineers, at least not by trade.
Yeah.
So, thanks for bearing with us for the first episode. This is our second. We're really looking forward to following up and kind of expanding on the track we set down in episode one. One thing we want to talk about is the title itself and how we came up with data center therapy. We've seen a lot over the years, and Alec, who's will hopefully be joining us maybe the next episode, and Chris and myself combined we have over 60 years of experience in the field, and we've literally been in hundreds of data centers. And it can be a thankless job, and if you're listening to this podcast, you probably share that feeling yourself. And we can certainly lay claim to working in some pretty dark and dingy workplace environments. I don't know about you, Chris. Are you comfortable right next to the AC unit in a lot of your data centers you enter?
Oh, I need to bring an extra coat. It's kind of like what's the old joke, right? What do we pay the IT department for when everything's working great, and when everything breaks, what do we pay the IT department for? But
exactly. So we're trying to provide IT. Banter and talk with a healthy dose of empathy here. So that's kind of the impetus behind the data center therapy name of the podcast, just to give a little context there. So last time we talked about vSphere 6.7. It's been out for a little while now. In an effort to keep these episodes succinct and concise, we cut it short a little bit, but there are still a few major points that we wanted to talk about. And the first one that we didn't mention last episode was yet another change. There should be an acronym for this. Yet another change to the recommended architecture for the platform services controller underlying the vSphere environment. Chris, can you break into this a little bit?
Yeah, well, this has been kind of a road with recommendations around how the platform services controller should be deployed. And to remind everybody, the platform services controller is a component that was introduced with vSphere 6.0 that handles authentication. It handles, authentication, centralized licensing, as well as centralized certificate management. They can be deployed in a federated manner, not dissimilar to how Active Directory would deploy. And the recommendations have changed a bit. And those recommendations really come down to a combination of federated vCenter servers, and this platform services controller can be deployed either in an embedded mode, where it's running on the vCenter server itself, or split out, where it's running on a separate platform, either a Windows or a VCSA appliance. VMware started this recommendation with, you should really split this out for everything but the smallest deployments. But if you are going to federate platform services controllers, you need to have them split out. Now, when this first started, we weren't actually able to split out a platform services controller if it started embedded. Well, that changed a bit, and we really for a while have been preferring an embedded model, but anytime we needed to federate services, and by federate I really mean enhanced linked mode, where we have multiple vCenter servers that are sharing authentication information by way of these SSO tokens. And so what you'll see when you log into one vCenter server is you see all of your vCenter servers in the inventory. A lot of customers really like this because that enabled cross vCenter vMotion from the GUI. Quick note, by the way, because there's been some confusion about this, you can do a cross vCenter vMotion from the command line using PowerCLI, provided you authenticate to both vCenter servers. Well, it's changed again. Now we can, with embedded platform services controllers, we can link them, having that same shared authentication source. This actually worked in 6.5. It was considered an unsupported configuration, although one that we did use to split out an embedded platform services controller into an external one. But I'm not aware of a way that we can actually take an external platform services controller and put it back into an embedded configuration. Is that something you've heard anything about, Matt?
It isn't, but it definitely lends credence to the option of just deploying a brand new vCenter, which is always an option every time you're talking about a vSphere upgrade. Made a little more sticky with the integration of, vSAN or DV switch. If you're talking about standard switches and external storage, it's really kind of do you care to lose your performance metrics in your archival stats? But no, I have not seen that out there, at least as of yet, to go in the other direction.
So I'd say officially as of 6.7, every new deployment should be set with an embedded platform services controller. Now, again, we're not always going to have that option because people that have, currently split out platform services controllers aren't going to be able to do that. And this really provides, I think, one more valid, I'm going to say, simple design for people to do. And that's where we can use vCenter HA with the vCSA with embedded platform services controllers. This bypasses the need for any kind of load balancing to get complete redundancy throughout the system. And we also can use enhanced linked mode, which really was a config before that we didn't practically have available. I only have a couple of customers that have ever tried using load balancers in front of platform services controllers, and it's always been with mixed success. And you always know that period when you're engineering something where we've put enough time into making this bulletproof that we've actually made it more delicate because of the complication that we introduce with it. You can kind of have that inflection point with so many
Chris, you just
technologies.
completely said it. I've had customers that started early and went with the dedicated separate PSCs, and boy, were they frustrated for it, and nothing more, because they thought they were doing the right thing, following the design, the best practice recommendation. It turns out, listen, something's wrong, and you know what? I don't really know what it is, but it could be this now that this has been introduced. And the black box nature, I mean, you can go ahead and dig into the log files, but there's about 300 of them. And what folder do I go in and take a look? So troubleshooting that was always an extra challenge. But you said it. The goal in mind, trying to add a level of robustness, and instead it just kind of makes it all the more temperamental, which is an unintended side effect, but a side effect nonetheless. You also mentioned vCenter HA. I had one customer trying to set this up. It sounds, I mean, the wizard, it is as straightforward as it gets, but it is important. You need a dedicated, not it cannot coexist with your management network. You need a dedicated VLAN for that heartbeat, or else you will run into a world of trouble. Have you seen that out there?
I have never had anybody try to use
Oh, lucky
the
you.
shared network with it. So no, thankfully I haven't run into that particular
Well,
situation.
it's also one of those things where if you want to kick it around in the lab, usually you end up not going with best practice recommendations, but you kind of just want to ram it in there, get it, try it out, and you're not worried about building out a separate layer two network for stuff like Heartbeat. Like for example, Microsoft Exchange. If you want to do DAG replication, you should have that on another network, but you don't really need to. And so when we went into the vCenter HA, I really assumed that that would have been the case. No, they mean it. You really need a separate network.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah, I and this may be, hey, it's right, we're data center therapy, so a quick perhaps confession. I have about 38 distinct layer two domain collision domains inside of my lab. Why so many, I don't know, but I have an entire slash eight network that is carved up. Could have something to do with NSX that I'm sure we'll be talking about at a later point. So
What do you use for IP management?
and
Don't you
well you're
dare say a spreadsheet.
no, I use DHCP,
Okay.
including on ESX hosts. But I will get into And probably on a different day, my treatise on data center management at scale, which I have been accused of a couple of heresies, but yeah, it actually all of my servers are DHCP.
You don't use static assignments.
Nope.
Yeah, I'm gonna let you twist with that one. I'm just gonna leave that out there. It's been said, let it be done. It's recorded, and the internet is forever, Chris.
Oh, we're going to see all of the people that come after me for this one. Obviously, there's a couple of switches that do have static IPs.
Sure.
ESX servers, everything, no, all DHCP, so there is no IP management. And I have one of the easiest household DR plans you can imagine because everything just comes up, dynamic DNS, and it starts again.
And so really what you need to do is you need to make sure that your DNS naming conventions are sound and recallable.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's good. That's not bad. That's an interesting way to do it. I will give you points for that.
It's well, you know, and full caveats, sometimes, as you mentioned in labs, we can be a little clever or maybe take a couple of shortcuts. So, although I do have customer designs that or in a few customers that do run DHCP, even on their ESX hosts, which is, yeah, certainly a different configuration, but is certainly supported and actually has a couple of advantages. But I'll get into that little design. I have a really interesting project that I think everyone will want to hear about in the after a couple more episodes here.
Okay, put a note down for that.
All right.
So, further new stuff with vSphere 6.7. Well, the storage side of that got updated as well, that namely vSAN. And one of the things that I saw with the vSAN side of things is that that caught my eye was the unmapped priority was actually up to this point before 6.7, it was the performance of it was capped. So basically, if it went to reclaim some space, I think it was capped at something like 25 megabits a second, something not all that impressive. And the nice thing with 6.7 is you can now, at your own risk, but you can go ahead and tweak with that. And if you've got an all-flash array or something, an all-flash vSAN, you can certainly do a lot better than that with a lot of your reclaim, performance operations. So.
Yeah.
You can certainly tweak that, which I thought was an interesting new component of vSAN.
I'll be interested to see what best practices really come out with because this unmapped support has been had a little bit of a sordid history where that feature was put out and then they actually pulled it back. And in 5.5, it could actually crush arrays just with the amount of I/O that it was doing. And additionally, the unit size that they were using for doing unmap on VMFS volumes was actually ballooning the space. And I felt with 6.5 that was which was the first version where unmap actually went entirely end to end. So for those that don't know, unmap commands now from that originate from the operating system can be passed down to the ESX host, which can then be passed down to storage all the way through. Fun little trick with that, by the way, if you were ever, and this requires VMFS 6, by the way, if you are moving machines over to VMFS 6 to reissue those unmap commands to free up more of your underlying storage space, you can actually use the Windows, oh, it's a storage optimizer. It's the tool that replaced the disk defrag. Running that will rerun the unmap commands and actually shrink your VMDK back down. So I'm interested because you actually had that priority option in 6.5. It didn't do anything. And you could manipulate it from the API and repeated tests, and I never got this to actually change. So that's kind of interesting that they've enabled that on this.
Well, I think one development, and vSAN is a part of this that everyone's going to be quite happy with, is feature forward now. There's stuff that you have to configure with vSAN using the HTML5 client. And so
Oh.
they are leaving Flash in the dust, and they can't put a bullet in that thing too soon, if you ask me. So they straight up called out that there will be things that, just like with the C Sharp client, it seems like we're at that phase for the most part, because up to this point, till recently, the update manager, NSX, certain DV switch things, you could
Yeah.
only do through the Flash client, and that list is getting shorter and shorter and shorter. And now I think they're certainly feature freezing the Flash in terms of any product they fold in is going to come in HTML5 first and only, instead of, for about 6 months ago or a year ago, even though the HTML5 client was actually out on the front foot, they would still put management into the Flash client first, and HTML5 would come later.
Yeah.
I think if everybody's wishing, and not everybody, but if you had a if you had to ask me if I polled all my customers, I would say everybody would have just been better off with the C# client being the way forward. I don't think you'd have a lot of complaints. The Flash client, I don't have a single customer who's a fan of the Flash client. Not one. Not one.
Yeah, I think you're right. In fact, some of the I do a decent amount of education around vSphere 6.5, including some training classes. The lowest marks I ever got as an instructor were actually complaining about the Flash client. I try to remind everybody now, and there's nothing I can do about the product. But yeah, it still lowered my reputation a little bit. They pinned it on me. And as a quick aside, because this does feel a little cyclical, because I've been working with ESX since the 2X days, and all of us in the community were complaining about the C# client because it was .NET and was heavy and coming from a web interface. And now I'm sad to see the C# client go, and not sad to see the Flash client go. But at a particular point, I think I just have to admit to myself that I just don't like change. So.
My biggest complaint with the web clients, and this goes for Flash or HTML5, is I've seen it be janky with the running tasks view.
Yeah.
As in with not that the C# client was perfect, but and things would hang up sometimes, or you know, a task, you couldn't cancel it. But what you see in there was with the C# client, you could pretty much, you know, take it to the bank, is what was going on with the process in the vCenter. Now I look at even HTML5, that recent tasks view, and I can't be certain if what I'm seeing there, if there's nothing in there, I can't be positive that nothing's running. So I go ahead and hit the refresh button. And that's really, it really slows down your workflow, because if you can't trust what you're looking at, you can't be certain if you need to troubleshoot or not. And that's frustrating for me.
Yeah, I have encountered that before, and I think that's somewhat of a victim of some of the scalability, right? Because your C# client connected directly to the VPXD process, where now you have a client that's running a web interface on Tomcat that's connecting back into the VPXD service, and I almost wonder if that's caused a thing. So,
well, it sounds like you were talking earlier. You went a little bit on the outside the margins on trying to break vCenter and pull it back together. You want to go into that?
Oh,
a little bit?
Yes. And in fact, this will be kind of a fun one. So I don't know what should we have, like a call this a challenge portion or Chris's throwdown? Maybe
I say you're like Bobby Flay or whatever.
So I embarked on a bit of testing inside of a lab, and this has very little practical purpose, although I was asked to do some testing on this, and it's changing the ports on a Windows vCenter server. Now, this was a 6.5 deployment, and so in 6.5, you cannot change the ports on a VCSA deployment off of their default of 80 and 443. But by the way, with 6.7, that's actually changed. You can change the ports. Well, the scope of this test, I installed a Windows vCenter server with 6.5 and I changed the ports 1443 and 180 were my two port numbers. I then tried to change them back to their default. Now, this requires quite a bit of kind of pawing through VMware's architecture inside of the vCenter server, because it turns out there is a reverse proxy that is actually what you're talking to inside of the system. So great. I looked at William Lamb's excellent blog. Does a lot of automation work and fiddled with the ports. On restarting this Windows service, of course, there's dependencies that have to go down. The component manager service would not start. And for the life of me, I cannot find the configuration anywhere to actually change the ports that component is referencing. So first person in the Northwest that finds how to do this and posts a reference video to the blog, I will deliver a very nice bottle of beer. And I guess we haven't talked about my love for craft brews, but Matt will vouch for me that it'll be a decent bottle of beer.
And Chris, how do you define the Northwest? Because listen, I could be in Montana and claim and you got to deliver it. You just said it.
All right, I'm in the Washington. We'll say Washington State. I don't know enough about liquor law trafficking between state lines. So.
Don't want to get. We got you rung up for bootlegging already. Episode 2, and we're going to lose you. Well, you mentioned, Chris, that you do training a lot of it around vSphere, but I just wanted to take this opportunity to mention that we are offering a complimentary assessment. Anybody running vSphere 6.5, 6.7, anybody in the Northwest, check out the show notes on the Ivoxy blog, so ivoxy.com, ivoxy.com, and for details. But yeah, if you wanna, if you have a 6.5, 6.7 environment, even 6.0, and you want a complimentary assessment on your environment to see about, what it would take to get you upgraded, go ahead and go on the website and submit the form, and we'll get back to you. So I think now is a good time to revisit one of our segments. We still don't have bumper music for this one, Chris, but I'm looking forward to it because it's got to be like Clown Show, I'm thinking. That's what I hear in my head.
I have samples for brass instruments, so I'll see what I can do
Got
for
like
the
a
next
Pee Wee's
time.
Great Adventure kind of thing going, or that kind of vibe.
A slide whistle is going to be a requirement.
There we go. Well, I've never seen that before. There's the little bumper for it. But it seems like I mean we're trying to go for an every 2 week cadence here, and it might sound like pretty frequent cadence for episodes, but that's all it takes for something else yet again to pop up and say, well, so I told my customer the story about how I say I've never seen that before, and it's just kind of a running internal joke. And then not an hour later, we ran into something that caused me to legitimately say I've never seen that before. So this one, I will protect the innocent and not call up my customer, obviously. But they did nothing wrong, by the way. They were upgrading. They had a vCenter environment running 5.5. I'm sorry, the vCenter was actually at 6.0, but they had three hosts running 5.5 update 2 ESXi. They wanted to go across the board upgrade to 6.5, and I think we're at 6.5 upgrade 2 at this point, update 2. We went on to the VMware interop matrix just to check the software because there was that 5.5 update 2, 5.5 update 3 difference with the Heartbleed, like you said. Everything is no problem. All good. 6.5 update 2 vCenter can talk to 5.5 update 2 ESXi host, no problem. Right from vCenter, green check mark. All good. We upgraded vCenter, and then upon the VCSA coming up, the hosts looked a little weird. We could still see them. The VMs were connected online, no problem there. We didn't. We never. At no point did we lose a VM. All good. But we couldn't do anything like vMotion, any kind of operation. And investigating further, you look at the host, like the VM kernel interfaces. There's nothing there. Gone. So do I
Oh,
trust
wow.
this? What's going on here? It ended up with a ticket with VMware, and they were even a little flabbergasted by it. Just, I mean, we upgraded vCenter. What's this got to do with our hosts all of a sudden saying goodbye? And you think about that update 2, update 3, Heartbleed, SSL issue, and you think maybe there's something here. But I mean, straight away, it's on the interop matrix, which means it's been tested and it works. Turns out that the scratch partition on the host was full. And
Oh.
one of the things that the vCenter does when it comes back up is it wants to upgrade the HA agent on the hosts. And I don't know exactly where the failure was, but I believe it took the old one out and went to install the new one, but the install didn't even fail. It didn't have enough room to temporarily copy the binary to the target host in order to install it.
Oh, that's an interesting one.
And I don't believe they've coded in a graceful a catch, for that error condition. And so we kind of got stuck in this weird middle of the road, like it would start to deploy, and then but it wouldn't give you your typical failures when you usually can't get an HA agent to install. You just go ahead and uninstall the FDM, the
Yeah.
VIB itself, and then repush it, and even that wasn't working. So it was odd, but yep, do a DF minus H from the ESXi shell, and you'll see we were at 98, 99% on this. We had about 20 meg left, and which was not enough for the HA agent.
So a couple of I guess this would be a good time to remind everybody if you're using non-persistent boot media on an ESX server, so that would include USB drives, SD cards, and Pixie booting, you should set a scratch partition to point to a persistent disk so it has some more space and doesn't fill up the RAM disk. Otherwise, just as with any Unix file system, you're going to run out of space because it's going to be borrowing it from the root. Because of course, with the entire point of ESXi was inflating that RAM disk and at boot time versus previous versions of ESX, which is probably also dating myself a little.
Oh yes. Well, so yeah, so Chris, I really hope that you're the one not to be a sadist, but I hope you're the one to feel the pain between now and the next episode, and maybe you can say something that you've never seen before, because let me tell you, sir, it's getting old.
I'll see what I can find.
Well, that about wraps it up for us for episode 2 of Data Center Therapy. Remember, we do offer that complimentary assessment to anyone in the Northwest for your existing vSphere environment. Check out the show notes on the ivoxy.com blog. And if you like what you hear, check us out at ivoxy.com, and you can see what services we offer, how we may be able to help you in your data center. The couch is not included. We usually don't bring that with us, but the whole therapy, maybe... Aren't the best jokes the one you have to explain yourself?
Yeah, well, probably not. But maybe we could get a portable one or badges. Can we have data center therapy polo shirts? That sounds like a request for marketing.
And we bring the padded room on.
There we go.
That might be a little more akin to where we go sometimes.
It's like a twisted version of those escape rooms or something.
Oh, right.
it's not a puzzle. We just lock you in here. No.
Well, so if you want to subscribe to these episodes, we're listed on the big boys now. We're on iTunes. We're on Google Play. We're on Stitcher. We're on Overcast. I think that covers like 80 to 90% of the footprint of people, how they usually consume podcasts. If you've got Apple TV or a HomePod, you can just say, look up Data Center Therapy, the podcast. It'll start playing. Pretty cool. If you've got stuff that you want us to talk about, if you have topics, if you have questions, if you just want to reach out, you can also email us at podcast@ivoxy.com. And, of course, check out the blog notes, because if we've talked about items that we reference sometimes, maybe not this episode, but sometimes we'll reference KV articles or specific links, you can always find those on the blog post that accompanies the episode at ivoxy.com after the episode. Chris, do you have anything you wanted to add before we wrap up?
No, I think that pretty well covers it.
Outstanding. Well, thanks. Well, for Chris, I'm Matt, and thanks for listening to yet another episode of Data Center Therapy. Have a great day, everyone.
Take care.